Hello, and welcome to the Bumpsy Proceedings Podcast. Every 2 months, we discuss an article or a related subject from the current edition of the Baylor University Medical Center Proceedings, the peer-reviewed journal of Baylor Scott & White Health. The editor of Proceedings is Dr. James W. Fleshman, who is Chief of Surgery at Baylor University Medical Center and Professor of Surgery at Texas A&M College of Medicine, Dallas. The Proceedings podcast is also sponsored by Dr. Harry T. Papaconstantino, who holds the Glenn E. and Rita K. Roney Endowed Chair in Surgery and is Professor and Chair of the Department of Surgery at Baylor Scott & White Medical Center in Temple, Texas. The featured article for the July edition of Proceedings is Burden of Delirium on Mortality and Healthcare Resource Utilization in Geriatric Patients Hospitalized for Inflammatory Bowel Disease. My guest today, Dr. Craig Olson, wrote the invited commentary on that article. Information about both articles can be found in the show notes. Dr. Olson is a fellowship-trained colon and rectal surgeon who specializes in rectal and colon cancer and pelvic floor disorders. He performs advanced, minimally invasive, robotic, and laparoscopic surgeries at Baylor Scott & White Colon and Rectal, Waxahachie, and is currently vice chair of the National American Society of Colon and Rectal Surgeons Pelvic Floor Disorders Consortium. Dr. Olson, thanks for being here today to talk about our subject, geriatric surgery.
Thanks, Lonnie, and to Baylor University Medical Proceedings for having me talk about this very important topic of surgery in geriatric patients.
Dr. Olson, we're breaking down our discussion into three broad areas. First, let's consider some questions that you as a surgeon frequently hear from patients and families. One, how old is too old for surgery?
That's an excellent question and one that we hear all the time. Patients want to know, am I too old to have this operation? And there's no right or wrong answer. As we get older, people age at different rates and they have different medical comorbidities as they age. So there's no upper limit to surgery, but we do want to consider some of their baseline medical problems and perhaps do some health screenings. And a lot of the things that are coming out now, I'd look at frailty, how generally strong or physically robust someone is, changes a lot as we get older, nutritional status, mobility status. Those are all things we can assess before the operation and to do a risk assessment to see if this operation is safe and something that someone could tolerate.
Do older patients have more complications after surgery?
Another interesting question. Classically, surgically, we think of patients that are older as not having an increased rate of specific surgical complications. So if you look at a case series of surgeries and you look at a particular complication and you look at age, it's often not a risk factor. But we do know that certain things are or do happen in the hospital at increased rates as we get older. And things like dementia, like our article talks about this month, is very common. Things like falls, things like malnutrition, and things like being admitted to a nursing home after surgery. And those are all factors that we need to consider as really complications that do happen at an increased rate in this population.
What can I do as a patient to improve my operative risk?
So there's something that the American College of Surgeons is doing where they're looking at starting geriatric surgical hospital verification. And what that program does is to look at how do we optimize outcomes or how do we optimize surgical risk in this population of patients greater than 75 years of age. So some of that comes down to what I talked about earlier, screening for appropriate problems with risk of dementia, risk of falls, risk of malnutrition, doing that preoperatively, and then trying to enhance some of those through prehabilitation or other means necessary prior to the operation, or using that information to make a different decision about the operation. And through this program, the American College of Surgeons is going to try to identify and help hospitals improve their care for these patients. And this is just a widely increasing segment of our population, and the need for surgery in people over 75 is only going to increase rapidly in the next 10 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm. Next, let's discuss some questions that you as a surgeon sometimes hear, but are important to ask. What does recovery after surgery look like in the geriatric population?
When we think about recovery after surgery, all the things that we want to do for patients that are younger, we want to continue to do for older patients. So it's very important to have patients get up after surgery and be mobile. That's going to, it's been shown to decrease dementia risk, be shown to decrease risk of ending up in a nursing home or with other cognitive problems after an operation. Another thing that we can do is to look at making sure someone has all their aids in terms of sensory aids after surgery. So if you're using glasses, if you're using hearing aids, you need to have those with you in the room, basically on at all times after surgery to help keep you oriented and prevent delirium and other problems that can occur. And want to be very active at looking at their medication list, making sure we're not giving them too many medicines that will contribute to delirium or other problems, and making sure that we continue to encourage appropriate nutrition and get people eating after operations and supporting their body and helping them recover.
Mm-hmm. As an older person, will I need rehabilitation after surgery?
I like to think of this as something where rehabilitation after surgery is something that we all need. And ideally, we're all going to be prehabilitated at any period of time, meaning we go into the operation as healthy as possible. But we know that sometimes that's not the case. So after surgery, we think about rehabilitation in terms of inpatient. Definitely, we're going to have all the patients are going to be assessed for risk of falls, and they're going to be getting up and walking and working with a physical therapist. Then they get a determination of whether or not some sort of outpatient or post-op rehab is necessary. Mm-hmm. And that comes down to the individual patient. Some patients do fine, don't have any difficulties, go home and continue their regular activities. Other patients are going to have more needs in terms of either in-home rehab or potentially inpatient rehab. And although those are outcomes we'd like to avoid, sometimes that's the right thing to do. And there are some risk assessment calculators you can use before an operation to see what the odds of that occurring are.
Another important question to ask, I have an advanced directive. Does that affect my operation?
I think in this setting, that really all patients should have an advanced directive and should have thought about what happens after an operation if things don't go well. In terms of surgery, we often get asked, does what happens in the operating room if I were to have a problem with my heart stopping or something like that? In general, we try to hold all advanced directives while somebody's in the operating room. But then after surgery is over, in the next 24 to 48 hours, those are things that we should observe the patient's wishes and look at all that. And in the operating room, it's not that we're not observing the patient's wishes, but it needs to be discussed that in the OR, we don't generally not resuscitate someone if there's a problem, because it's usually an acute problem that hopefully we can fix.
Mm-hmm. My loved one has mild dementia and was told never to have anesthesia. Is this safe?
Anesthetics do represent some risk for increased delirium or perhaps worsening of dementia, and that's where you really need to consider goals of care. And we should always be having a goals of care discussion with older patients to see what are we trying to achieve with this operation and can it be achieved safely and what are the alternatives to operating? What does it look like if I don't have this operation? And sometimes that's the better answer.
Finally, let's consider some questions a medical professional might ask. What is frailty and how does it affect surgical outcomes?
Frailty is a general assessment of someone's, more or less, their physical rigor. And in general, patients that aren't as physically strong are going to have a more difficult time with surgery. So one of the excellent tests for that is the up and go test, where you have a patient sitting in a chair, stand up, walk 10 feet, walk back. If you're not able to do that in 12 seconds or less, you're at an increased risk for falls. And that's been definitively shown, and it's something that we need to pay attention to and watch so we can help prevent those falls after an operation.
How does dementia affect surgical outcomes?
Dementia is one of those things that is very disconcerting to the patient, and in particular the patient family. It's very difficult to walk in and see your loved one not knowing what time of day it is, not knowing where they are, not even necessarily recognizing their own loved ones. And that's something that always is very emotionally difficult to deal with. And it's also been shown to increase several potential complications. So we look at dementia patients, they have a much higher risk of readmission after discharge, much higher risk of being discharged to an institution or nursing home, higher risk of mortality. And those are three things that we'd like to avoid if possible.
How is polypharmacy managed in the perioperative period?
When we think of polypharmacy, this is a term describing patients that are on lots of medications. And those medications can interact with each other or contribute to a bad outcome such as delirium. So managing polypharmacy is a matter of reviewing their medication list, hopefully with a pharmacist who's very familiar with these drug interactions and the effects that these drugs have on the body, and reducing or eliminating some of those medicines that aren't particularly helpful and may contribute to having bad outcomes.
How effective is prehabilitation in improving surgical outcomes?
Prehabilitation is something that we all want to be excited about, and something that ideally we're all prehabilitated through living a healthy lifestyle and maintaining activity. When we look at actual prehabilitation studies, the evidence is not particularly beneficial, although there are some benefits in terms of walking distance and some minor metrics. But in terms of preventing actual surgical complications, I think we still have a lot to learn about prehabilitation and the correct ways to do it to try to improve our surgical outcomes.
So let me ask some general questions. Do you have a high percentage of geriatric patients in your practice?
In my personal practice, it's quite high given the area where I practice and the demographic. If we look at nationally, 40% of inpatients that have surgery are over 75 or meet criteria to be geriatric. So it's high now, and it's going to continue to increase as time goes on.
Is geriatrics now a medical specialty?
So yes, geriatrics is a specialty that people can go into after training in internal medicine. And there are, in many hospitals, specialized geriatric units. And there are geriatric hospital verifications, and the new American College of Surgeons geriatric surgical verification program that we discussed a little bit earlier. But the aim of all these, and if we look at the one I'm most familiar with, which is the surgical verification, it's all about improving the outcomes through bringing all the people taking care of geriatric patients together to discuss how best to do that and how to have appropriate discussions with the patients and their families to understand the operation and make the right decision moving forward.
Dr. Olson, thanks so much for talking with us about geriatric surgery. I wish you the best in your practice.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having me today.
That concludes this episode. Be on the lookout for the next episode from Bumpsy Proceedings, scheduled to be published in September.